Welcome to episode number 334 of the Family Podcast Network. Today on this episode, we're going to have a Family Podcast Network FPN Classic Remix. That's right, we're going to take it back to an episode many, many moons ago. We're going to go back to episode 192, The Hissy Fit. We're going to talk a little bit today about what do we do if we have hissy fits and tantrums and meltdowns. Been very pertinent in our life with our foster kiddo. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Stay tuned for it and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids, and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent. There is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is October the 15th, 2014. It is middle of the week Wednesday. That's right, we have reached the middle of the week. Guys, I want to issue a quick disclaimer and apology to y'all, for the shows that have been very sporadic a lot more lately. I appreciate your patience with it. We have had a very special time. And the large piece to that is, for those of you guys who may be your first-time listeners, or you're just checking in today because you want to hear more about hissy fits and meltdowns, we recently adopted a little girl, 4-year-old little girl, and she has brought with her a lot of baggage. Anytime that you do these things, for those of you guys who also don't know, I used to work in the foster and adoption agencies years ago, and there's always a honeymoon period. And during the honeymoon period, I mean, everything's good and great, and everything seems to be fantastic. And just like in anything else, whether it's marriages or anything else in life, honeymoon phases end. And when they do, things get special. And things have gotten special with our foster kiddo. And so anyway, we've had a lot more latencies just because we have been very emotionally and physically and mentally exhausted. I don't mean to throw all those three together to make it sound better. I mean, literally, we have exhausted our resources at the end of the day in those three categories. We have been challenged in ways we've never been challenged before. And so stay tuned for that. Before we move into the actual show for today, I'll walk you guys on a little bit more of that information. Before we get into that, let's get some quick housekeeping out of the way. If you guys want to get notified of all the new episodes, jump over to thehumanwepodcast.com, right-hand side, name and email address. When you sign up for that and you hit submit, it puts you on a list to make sure that you keep updated on all the new shows that come out, especially right now as things are a little more sporadic when we're getting these out. We are getting those in a minimum of 1 to 2 a week, guys, just so you know, for those of you who are new listeners. We're getting new shows every week. And if you want to make sure that you know what day does Trey get them out, so you don't have to go keep back and check in, or you know, having to go look on iTunes or anything like that. Simple, easy way to do that. Jump over there, name, email address. When you put that in there, you'll get notified of all the new episodes that we come out here at the Family Podcast Network. That's beneficial, and we highly recommend it. It's one of the services that few people stop signing up for, and if they do, it's typically because they're listening on Stitcher or iTunes or something like that. So jump over there and check that out. Make sure that you share this episode on Facebook. Don't forget, man, that's really important, and we love likes. First off, I want to say thanks to what I call my Facebook like brigade. You guys are awesome. And it sounds funny, but likes is actually what increases the algorithm likelihood. It literally actually increases an algorithm and in Facebook that determines whether or not I get seen by you guys. That's right. If you sign up for my stuff, you are not necessarily getting it. So whenever you guys like it, you'll help bump it up into those threads and help it make it more likely that more people are going to see it. Help stuff also potentially go viral. Thank you guys for doing all of that. So consider sharing that. Let people know what you thought about it. Also, guys, you want to support the show, 30 cents per episode. If you feel like you're getting 3 dimes at every single one of these episodes, consider becoming a P-Tacker. That's right. Go to thehumanwepodcast.com. Click on the Become a Member. You do get access to stuff that is available only and exclusively to you guys as members. Last, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, topics that you want to shoot us, several of you guys have shot me some articles this week I did get those, and we're collecting those. I'm probably going to pump that out this next week for a Media Sucks Monday show. So thank you to all you guys who are submitting those. Keep them coming. And there never can be enough. I've been in a lull lately. I've been doing my own Media Sucks Monday. I've been pulling my own shows, but I'd rather be talking about what you guys want to talk about. Shoot me those thoughts. We'll consider them. We'll talk about them. We'll put them on the air. If you guys have any questions or comments, you can, a lot of ways you can touch base with us with these topics and that kind of stuff you want to send us. You can always email us at TreyGibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. You can also go to the Contact Us page. And when you go to that Contact Us page, you can also leave a online internet voicemail with that. And as long as you have a microphone connected to your computer, leave us that. We'd love to air your question on the show. Get your voice on the radio. Boom, baby. Come check it out. All right, guys, with all of that out of the way today, let's get into our topic for today. Again, we're going to talk a little bit out of a classic. Today's going to be an FPN classic remix. It goes all the way back to episode 192. I mean, isn't that crazy? And we did this one over a year ago in 2013. Man, it's amazing how far we've come with this show. But this was a show that we did over the Hizzy Fit. We're gonna call this week. It's going to be called Meltdown. And the Meltdown Wednesday show. And again, so just segueing off what we talked a little bit about in the intro segment, foster kiddo, lots of meltdowns, and she comes with a lot of emotional baggage. There's something out there called reactive attachment disorder, and I did a lot of research and a lot of work with families that experience this because of the fact I worked in the foster programs for over 10 years. And what happens is that, and it's natural human behavior, that whenever we get into situations where we get close, the people in our lives we are supposed to be the absolute closest to, who are those people? It's our parents, right? We're supposed to. You say, well, Trey, you don't know my parents. And I'm not disagreeing with you on that. But the point is that is the people we're supposed to be able to get the close to. It's what we attach to. We begin to feel safe. Whenever I cry, whenever I'm hungry, whenever I'm wet, whenever I'm comfortable, if I cry, a mom or a dad is going to come and pick me up and they're going to take care of me, right? So we attach securely with people, hopefully. That's the idea behind what we want to be doing, is attaching. If we're not careful, and kids are allowed to attach to people, and then they get torn away from them. So a kid's born, and like, for instance, this is the story of our foster kiddo. Our kiddo is born and attached to mom and dad. Mom and dad were messy people. That's just, I'm being very polite with what I'm saying here, but they were messy people. They got into very messy things, and because of that, CPS, Child Protective Services here in Texas, pulled their kiddos from them and placed them with a family member for a while. And this family members were just too old to take care of kiddos for long term. And so they got placed with us. So kiddo comes out, stays with mom and dad, gets yanked away and torn away from them. Then placed with grandma and grandpa, who they love. Spends time with them, gets close with them, but then gets yanked out of them and pulls them and puts them with us. When that happens, kids will begin to develop a mentality. Whether they understand this conscientiously or not, they develop this perspective that if I get close to someone, they're going to leave me. They're going to be gone. One of these days, I'm going to get pulled from them, and I'm going to get stuck with somebody else. So what they will attempt to do is, whenever they find you, they will attempt to push you away. Because what their mentality is I know I'm going to get yanked away from you. Might as well just go ahead and hurry it up. And so what happens is they react to anything that asks them or anyone who asks them to attach, right? Because they know deep down inside that it's like walking on thin ice. You're walking and you may be fine, but and it doesn't matter. If you've been walking on thin ice and you move into thick ice and you don't know it, you're still terrified. You're terrified that next step is going to be the crack and you're going to plunge into that cold water. It's better to stay over, you know, on the side of the shore where it's butt freezing cold than it is to venture out here. So you see what I'm saying? It can be a mentality like that. There's also another concept, is that little kids don't often have the verbal capacity to be able to explain what they're feeling and what they're thinking, and especially not make sense out of what happens to them, especially in crazy situations like what this little girl came out of. And when she landed in our laps, you know, what we're beginning to see lately is more and more meltdowns. So one of our other concerns or thoughts is that she's got all of this anger and hurt and resentment or whatever it is that's going on inside her heart that she has no way to express, and she's had no way to give it, you know, to get it out. And so we're airing the covers here, and we're fluffing out the sheets, and all the junk is coming out here. And there's only one safe place to do it. So honeymoon phase is over. And we have been progressively dealing with more and more meltdowns and temper tantrums and screaming fits that literally can dampen your ear and spitting. And now we're slowly starting to move into some of these behaviors are becoming violent. And by violent, what I mean is like there's door kicking, and we have a little sliding accordion door that goes to one of the kids' room. We had that kicked off the hinges the other day. So before you guys are like, oh my gosh, you sound aghast with it, or you're like, you know, oh, the poor souls. We really are doing fine. It's not coming out towards any kid at all. It's very directed right now because my wife is home all day. We homeschool and we do stay-at-home mom stuff. Right now, it's all directed towards my wife, Corey. Which in its own way is a good thing because, you know, we're kind of the ones that made the primary decision to bring another kiddo into this house. We'd really rather it didn't turn to another kiddo. And largely just because we want them developing good relationships with her, because the better the relationships they have with this little girl, the more that they'll be able to influence her, which is what we want. And then, of course, we don't want anybody getting hurt either. But lots of driving down the road and temper tantrums, squealing, screaming fits get so bad that we've got to pull over on the side of the road and just take her out of the car. And mind you, this is like when I say side of the road, I don't mean like busy highway side of the road. But, you know, we found like a parking lot that we can park and get her out. And we just have to sit on the curb for a while until we're done screaming because it's just so loud. And we've had spitting, lots of different types of things like that, willful urination and those different kinds of things. And so we're filtering it all through the lens of, number one, these are all potential tools that are designed to force us away. How long is it going to be? How much of my crap can you take before you quit on us? You quit on me just like everybody else has. But then the other side of that is how much of this is just that she's just pissed. She is absolutely enraged, pissed. And she's just trying to vent her crap out in a way, the only way that she knows how. And in a lot of ways, we're safe to her. Maybe it's even that she trusts us enough that she's willing to unload that, to let us see the ugliest side of her, and she trusts us with that. And so we're choosing to filter that. Now, I'm not telling you that in the middle of one of these meltdowns, it's the easiest to see that. But we choose to view these meltdowns in this way. And so I wanted to spend some time, number one, to let you guys know, you know, where has Trey been? Why have the shows not been the consistent three times a week like they have before? Many of them, I am literally sacked out in bed with my clothes on. There's been many nights where it's just we lay down and we go, holy crap, we're alive. And we'll fall asleep with our clothes on and wake up a few hours later and get undressed and go to sleep. It's just been crazy, crazy, wicked, weird. And so we're just in that position right now where things are just tough. How are we holding up? I know that's going to be kind of one of the questions here is kind of people are like, so where are we at here? We walked into this under the understanding that the best things in life for us as a family, at least for my wife and I at this point, is that we believe that we were called to this. Now, when we say called, some of you guys may not be familiar with some of the spiritual vernacular here. Remember, this is a show that is not about pushing a religious agenda or belief system here. We have atheists, we have agnostics, we have some Buddhists that listen to this show. And so I don't want anybody to feel like this is a religious hour. For us and our family, we believe in the God of the Christian Bible, Yahweh and Jesus Christ, etc. And we believe that we were called to this. And by calling, what we mean is that just that there's been a series of events that have fallen and orchestrated themselves together in a way that we don't believe that it was just circumstance that have led us to the point where it just felt like the right thing to do was to adopt. And we have a fundamental belief system in our household that the best things in life are when we stop and we focus on the needs and the objectives of others. So I wanted to read you something today. You guys have probably heard me talk before about my a good friend of mine named Josh, and he and I have had a lot of discussions lately, about what we believe about life and liberty and property rights, pursuit of happiness, a lot of the constitutional stuff that they refer to as inherent rights. We've been talking a lot about them because there is a fundamental application of all of these things into what we do as parents. And so we have to spend some time talking about this. And so my buddy sent this over to me today, and it really spoke to me. not just on a we're going to talk a lot about work in this, but you know, for me as a foster parent who's looking to adopt this kid very soon, this was a particularly good quote. He sent this over to me because it was a part of his daily devotional, and it reads, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. This struggle may be a moral one or it may be a physical one, and it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without demand. It never did and it never will. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them, and these will continue until they are resisted with either words or blows or with both. The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress." That was Frederick Douglass. But the part that spoke to me, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. In our country today, in the society that we live in, we are very, very, very hedonistic. If y'all are new to the show, hedonism is a belief system that pleasure is the ultimate good and pain the ultimate thing to be avoided. But we challenge that here by acknowledging that some of the best things that we've ever had in our life came through struggle and pain. Children are one of them. Time and pressure is an amazing thing. It's what makes diamonds. And I mean that in the literal sense, not in a metaphoric here. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. And what I have to choose to see all of this as, all of the meltdowns and the hissy fits and the out-of-control behavior, I must see it as this is us plowing the ground. I want a crop out of my family. I want people to be happy and experience joy and freedom of choice. But the reality is, I can't do it if there isn't struggle. Babies do not get born, whether it's natural birth or cesarean sections, they don't get born without struggle and pain. And I have to choose to see all that we're going through here over the last month and a half, 2 months now. I must see it for what it is. It is the struggle. It is the thunder and the lightning before the rain. It's the roar of the water before the tide of the ocean. It is the breaking of the ground, as difficult as it may be, that will one day bear harvest. You got to see it for what it is. And I want to encourage every one of you today to do that with your kids. You cannot produce a child who contributes back to society and does not take from everyone. You cannot raise a kid who focuses on the objectives and the needs of others, who is intelligent and smart and problem-solving. You cannot raise your kids in that if there is not struggle. I'm not advocating that you should be fighting with your kids all the time. As a matter of fact, a part of the struggle, I will argue, is learning how to not fight with them. But if you're going through meltdowns, if you're going through the fits, difficult behaviors that you're having a hard time getting rid of, I want you guys to stand your ground. I want you to hang on. I want you to acknowledge that in the middle of your storm is one of the best places to be. Because if there is no storm, there is no growth. Humans thrive on adversity, whether we like it or not. We thrive on it. Necessity is the mother of invention in most cases. And sometimes the best parenting techniques, the best ideas, the best thoughts that you're ever going to get, the things that are going to help you solve the complex, massive problems with your children are going to come whenever the need is the greatest and you have to think about it. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. So I want to take some time today to take you back. Back to January of 2013 on our classic remix, episode 192. This is the Hissy Fit, Conquering the Temper Tantrum. Let's take you back.
I'm really excited about today. Today's topic, again, is hissy fit, conquering the temper tantrum. I think this is a vital one. Because in reality, the temper tantrum happens to everybody. So, you know, it's a nasty little booger. It plagues all of us. We've all bumped into it in some, you know, way or form. And inevitably, it seems to happen where? In flipping Walmart or something. Ah! You know, it's that one place where you just know. You just know. Everybody's looking at you like, oh, my God, he's a bad dad. You know, and nobody is. Some people are, but most of them are just like, I'm sorry, man. It happened to me last week. You know, but this is a nasty little booger, and often we're very unsure how to fix this. And we often question and wonder, is there a way to fix that? And the answer is absolutely yes. But before we get into that, guys, let's go ahead and play the listener call real quick just to kind of hear the background on it.
Trey, this is Mark. I called you a couple weeks ago, I guess it was. And I have a question for you. Our three-year-old, when we go to put her in timeout or ask her to do something that she doesn't want to do, throws a complete hissy fit, a complete temper tantrum, kicks the wall, you know, hits the wall, throws herself down on the floor being limp. I think she got my temper. My 23-month-old is the same way. He has just as big a temper. So how do we change this? I mean, we've been trying to explain to them, like you said, okay, this is not the way we act, but she gets such a temper that it's like it goes right in one ear and out the other. She's not even listening. So if you could give me some feedback on that, either email or, I mean, if you're answered online, that's fine, but something, please. Need some help. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work, and God bless.
You know, see, this is a good question, and truthfully, Mark, you're hitting on something here that's actually pretty insightful of you that you're picking up on. You know, the reality is this. The temper tantrums are multifaceted. And what we're going to do is we're going to break down a little bit about what the temper tantrum is, because I think it's vital for parents to understand where a temper tantrum comes from, because I think a lot of times kids get misunderstood when it comes to the ever classic temper tantrum. So, again, I wanted to play this for you guys just so we can all kind of get this idea. There's a connection that we can all make with this, you know, understanding that this kind of thing happens, that it is a reality. And, you know, we've seen it in every one of our kids, truthfully. Now, I will be honest, we didn't see it for long. And I started studying the temper tantrum well before we had kids, because I was a counseling psychology major with emphasis in family studies, and that's what I did. And so, you know, I began to realize that, you know, what was going on here, because I had no clue how to do that. I had no clue how to handle a temper tantrum. And so we started doing a little bit of research, and we played around with what we thought might work and what didn't work. And we had a really good system put together before my oldest was 2 years old. And let me tell you, one of the best things we ever did was we studied and put this together. Saved us a lot of pulled out hair and ready to punch kids and whatever and those kinds of things. But so let's talk a little bit about where does the tantrum come from. So let's think about just kind of developmentally what's going on here, right? So up until this point, how have our infants communicated to this point, right? I mean, it's a simple formula, right? Anytime our kids are uncomfortable, what do? They cry, right? They throw a little bit of a crying fit, right? So if the baby's diaper is dirty and it's getting uncomfortable, maybe it's chafing or making a diaper rash or something like that, it gets uncomfortable. So what do to get our attention? They cry. So if they're hungry and they need to eat and they haven't eaten in a long time and they start to get uncomfortable, what do? They cry. If they're feeling some level of experiential pain and they don't know what to do or how to make it stop, what do? They cry. I mean, you see how that works? I mean, the reality is that this idea of blowing up and throwing a fit is pretty common up to him at this point. And it's one of those things that, I mean, in reality, we don't question this. You know, we accept it as kind of an innate thing that happens in a kid. Now, before some of you guys shut me down and think, oh, is he saying that, you know, as kids get older, it's just normal for them to whine? No, that's not what I'm saying. There does come that point where we've got to start transitioning into something different. But we'll cover that here in a little bit. But the reality is this. Kids throw fits when they're young to get everything that they need. It's just what they do. It's a crying fit. Now, I'm not suggesting that if your little bitty kids or like your infants and whatnot, and your newborns are crying, that they are quote-unquote throwing a fit. I mean, you got to see it this way. It is them trying to communicate with the only language that comes built in with them. I mean, that's just babies. Babies just cry. When they come out, that's just what they do. They cry to get what they need. It's not about manipulation. Oh, my God, I've had parents try to convince me that their infants are trying to manipulate them. Oh, they know. They know what they're doing. It's untrue. Kids are only trying to get their necessary wants and needs. And that's the only way they know how to do it. It's the only way they can do it when they're little. Now, as they get older, and you would be surprised, we have taught sign language to every single one of our kids by 6 to 7 months. And earlier in some cases. But on average, 6 to 7 months. Yes, my 7-year-old daughter, Charlotte, right now, can look at mama and sign milk and start getting breastfed. I mean, I'm telling you guys, it works. It's nuts. It's crazy. Some have asked me, well, why is that? Because the speech centers of the brain develop later than the hand-eye coordination centers of the brain. That's just the simple fact to it. So, kids really can communicate when they're little, when they're littler. But the reality is that verbal communication takes much later into the game. So once again, I want to go over this. It's normal for kids to want to cry to get what they want. Now, we all acknowledge that there comes this age that we expect kids to behave differently. We all acknowledge that there reaches that point where the kid cannot continue to throw huge temper tantrums to get what they want. They can't continue to throw these big giant fits to get what they want. And that rightly so. I mean, that's the right thinking. We want to wean that out of our kids because we don't want our kids growing up to be full-grown adults learning if they stomp their feet and flip around and go limp on us that they can get what they want. We need to work that behavior out of their repertoire, right? We've got to give them alternative ways that they can learn to cope with their disappointment, with their frustrations, with their hurts or whatever else in such a way where they're not, throwing these little temper tantrums. I mean, I get that. And I mean, let's be honest. Although I made the comment that adults are not allowed to throw these fits, let's be honest, sometimes they do. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit as well. But a lot of times parents throw these fits. I tell you, I was watching a mom the other day. I tell you, Walmart, man, let me tell you, as a psychologist, a counseling psychologist with emphasis in family, Walmart is like it is just the dream place when it comes to watching behaviors. And I watched a mom sit there as this kid was like, "No, mom, I want a toy. And that mom looked at that little kid, her eyes got huge, thought she was about to eat her child, and she just looked at that little boy and went, "You're going to stop asking for that toy." I mean, I was flashing back to Poltergeist. I'm thinking her head's going to turn around or some clown is going to come around this corner and start talking to us. I mean, I was freaked out. I thought she's going to eat this child. And I stepped and I thought to myself, does she not realize what she just did? It's the classic, "Don't yell!" You know what I mean? She told a kid not to throw a fit through throwing a fit. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in just a minute. But the reality is that though these kids are doing what they've always done, they've reached this age that eventually we start wanting different results from them. We want them to stop whining. We want them to stop, throwing these temper tantrums to get what they want. And that's not a problem. That's a good thing. Not only is it, it's our sanity, but even more importantly, it's about our kids need to learn. They need to learn how to do things differently. We need to discipline them, right? Which means to disciple and to teach them and show them different ways of handling things other than the ways that they've always done it innately since they've been born. So when we begin to work with our kids, often as we're showing them these new things, there's often a latency period, kind of like a transition time that they go through. And so in a lot of cases, the answer to all of this is it just takes a little bit of time. Sometimes it just takes being a little bit persistent. But on the flip side, I do acknowledge that sometimes, even when we understand this, some of these habits persist. So let's talk real quick when it comes to our temper tantrums. What are we really seeing? There's three primary things that I see that most of these get categorized into when it comes to what is our kid wanting from us. Again, remember, all behaviors are trying to tell us something, okay? We've just got to figure out what it is. So in reality, what are we seeing from our kids when they're throwing these temper tantrums? Number one, kids began to realize that their old ways are not going to work anymore, right? Kids who have always cried and thrown fits to get what they want, who were able to throw, the cry up, and then their needs were met, when not in an unhealthy way, it's just what they did. All of a sudden, they're in a stage now where they're learning that these aren't going to work anymore. Now, I'm saying this because I want you guys to hear me, is that not always is it about pushing buttons. I think automatically a lot of parents jump to the mentality that, oh, they must be doing this to make me mad. Contrary to most opinion, most kids aren't trying to make you mad until later in their teens. In most cases, your kid wants to please you, or if nothing else, they want your attention. And sometimes they realize that the only way they can get that attention from you is when they screw it up, okay? But they're reaching this point now, right, where the old ways, the things that they've done in the past, they're not working for them anymore. What are they, in essence, actually doing? They're just trying to communicate to you in their old language, right? They're just trying to get across from you, to you, what they want through the old language that they had always done it through. You see, old habits die hard in kids, too. Second thing, what are we seeing when we often see these type of temper tantrums? Often we're seeing a mirror. It's kind of the classic in a glass darkly. In a lot of cases, we're seeing our reactions parroted back to us. Now, you see, parents don't like this. Because this one takes self-ownership in this issue. That this is not just an issue of a kid being a defiant little fart, or it's not just an issue of a kid just wanting to blow up to get the toy that they want. All of a sudden, we have to start asking ourselves, are we teaching our kids to be this way? And I'm going to tell you guys this. You absolutely can be teaching it even when you don't mean to. A while back, I was sitting there, and my son was working on something. I came in, I said, son, you need to stop working on that. And because he was trying to take the batteries out of the controller. This was probably about a year ago. So he wasn't nearly as adroit when it came to this battery changing process. And I said, you need to put that down. And he looked at me and he said, no. And I told him, I said, Grant, you need to take that down. The next thing I know, that little boy had his arms crossed. His chest was just all puffed out. Puffed up. Oh, I can fight you. And he stuck that little chin out. And let me tell you, at this point, what is daddy doing? Daddy's about ready to grab Thor's hammer and come down on this kid. I was ready to tear me up some chitlin. And I stopped myself and I looked down. Guess what my body was doing? I had my arms crossed. I had my chest puffed up. My chin was sticking out. What was my son doing? Only exactly what he saw his father did. You see, this is the hardest part of good of great parenting. We talk a lot about, you know, there's a difference between good parenting. The number one enemy to being a great parent is not a bad parent. It's not. The number one enemy to being a great parent is just being a good one. There's a lot of parents that have chosen to take the mediocrity out, you know, and or push the mediocrity into their parenting and just kind of hit right there in the middle. That's not for me. Maybe that works for some folks. That is not for me and my family. And truthfully, I think this is one of the best keys to unlocking moving from that good parent to the great parent is that ability to admit to yourself, crap, I taught him that. I taught him that. So in a lot of cases, when our kids are throwing these temper tantrums, they're doing nothing but what they have seen. I think we often like to say, well, I don't have temper tantrums like that. I don't stomp the floor and collapse on myself and whine. I mean, I don't do that. But if you really look carefully, you will often see that we throw adult fits all the time. My wife walked in the other day and said, hey, would you be willing to do the dishes? And I'm a big dish doer. I mean, I'm a very domestic man. I love helping my wife around the house. Happy wife equals happy husband. And I don't mean that like, she's going to be mad at me. I don't mean it that way. But happy wife equals happy husband, so I'm always doing dishes. And the other day she came in and she goes, you want to do the dishes? And I was like, God, no, I just got home, and I blah, 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 and I blee, 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 blee. And you know what I realized? I just threw an adult fit. I had just thrown an adult fit at my wife. And yet I sit here and sometimes have the gall and audacity to wonder, where do my kids get this crap from? That's nuts. It's me. Very powerful thing you can do is learn to acknowledge the mirror that you often are seeing in your kid. And then number three, what are we often seeing is that we're feeding it somehow. Remember, like we said earlier, all behaviors serve a purpose. And if we can just figure out what that purpose is, we can help the kids get to the solutions they're looking for without having to do things like burn a relationship through whining, etc. Now, often, behaviors persist when they get fed. And we don't even realize that we're doing it sometimes. Because I'm going to tell you guys this. Listen carefully. This is one of Trey's nuggets of wisdom right here that's very, very impactful. Whatever behaviors that we notice get fed. Let me say that one more time. Whatever behaviors that we notice, that we pay attention to, that we give attention with, that we say something about, it gets fed. A while back, we had the kids go clean the room. We had a stint there where we were having heck in a handbag and getting kids to clean room. I mean, we were just like, I don't know what to do. We're just ready to start throwing toys away. And we just don't even touch spanking. We were to get to that point where we're like, I'm ready to whoop their butts, man. This is getting so bad. I'm really tired of this. And so we were sitting there talking about this. And finally, I sat down, started a little bit of thinking. Now we're going to get this fixed. So we sat, I came in there, and the kids were just kind of farting around. Because it got to where, like, we would say, okay, kids, you want to clean your room? And then we'd go, and we'd come back, and they hadn't worked on it. They'd go, guys, you need to clean your room. We'd go, and they'd come back, and, you know, they hadn't worked on stuff. We would do it, I mean, literally all day long. So finally, I realized that what I was doing was, I was only popping my head in when they were doing something wrong. When they weren't getting what I needed them to do. All the attention that they would get was rotated around them sitting there not doing anything. You see what happened there? I was feeding one of those behaviors, and it was the one that I didn't want to see anymore. It was my fault. You see, behaviors are like animals, guys. Behaviors are like animals. Whichever one that you feed the most often is the one who survives. It's just the reality to it. Even the spindly little behaviors we don't want anymore. If you don't feed it, it doesn't happen. So in reality, you guys have actually, like within those three that we just talked about, what are we seeing when it comes to this? Lies the three top answers to most of the issues that parents are having when it comes to these hissy fits. So let's talk real quick about the solutions. We're going to wrap it up. Makes a little bit of a shorter show today. Because I really want you guys to chew on this. So let's talk about solutions. Number one, be empathic. Remember again, it's just what kids do when they're little. The goal of the parent is actually to help them wean that out of their system. In a lot of ways, what a lot of parents are just crucifying their kids for are actually issues that we on our end as parents, we're not helping them rectify. We're not teaching them how to do better with it. Guys, I am guilty as this as anybody else. I get so upset with my kid because they're not acting the way I want them to act, and yet I've never actually stopped to teach them how. Ouch. Not designed to be mean or hurtful, but ouch. So we need to be very empathic with them and just understand that kids do goofy, dumb things. Kids throw little temper tantrums and go hissy fitty sometimes. And we need to be willing to accept that. I'm not saying you let it off the hook. I'm not saying that there's not consequences for it. Of course, you need to be in all of those cases if we want to see it disappear. However, it is a part of being a kid. Next off, another one of my favorites is, you need to find, like a witch hunt, guys. Pretend it is a witch hunt or a 1970s communist scare, whatever it is. You need to make like a witch hunt. And you need to figure out where you are doing similar things as well. Remember, we talked about number two being the mirror, right? Kids do what they see. So you need to spend the majority of your time figuring out how to fix it yourself, because you will be surprised where we teach these things. And it's not a big deal. It's not about being humbling or anything else like that. It's just finally making us go, wow, I'm doing this. No wonder they're having a hard time getting over that. They're doing exactly what they've seen me do. And there's a power, an inherent power that happens when we acknowledge that. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with your kids. We screw up, guys. We screw up. It's a part of it. I'm not saying it's nice or comfortable or even something I'm wanting to hear people do on a regular basis, but we do it. Also, don't be afraid to get recruit your spouse to kind of check it out and see what's going on. What are you doing that's causing this? A lot of times spouses have a unique availability to look at that and figure that out. So recruit spouses in there and get them helping you understand what's going on and how what are you doing that is teaching it to your kids, and then get it out of there. And then last, number three, Starve It. Starve It. Remember, number three in the what are we seeing is feeding it. So what do you need to do? You got to starve it. You got to starve that behavior out. You want to make sure that you give very little attention to the poor behavior. You need to make sure that they get minimal what they need to get them squared away, whether it's timeout or whatever else, but they don't need to get a drop, lick, or iota of extra attention past that. This is not to punish them. This is not to make them uncomfortable. This is not to make them pay. This is about making sure that our kids are getting way more attention for doing it right than they're doing it wrong. Now, let's say they get it right. Let's say they give us the good behavior. You need to praise the crap ton out of them. Okay, you need to make sure that they understand that they did it right and that you're so proud of them, that you really appreciate it and all that other stuff. Your kid needs to feel really good after they do it right. When they don't throw a fit, when they don't throw a hissy, when they do take it well, good job for not throwing a fit. I'm so impressed. We just got that through our son. My son's a very emotional kid. And when he doesn't get something, there was a while there, he would just cry for everything. Even at 3 and a half, almost 4 years old, he cried for everything. He'd get upset because he didn't get something, he'd start crying. My job as a parent is to teach him how to handle those disappointments effectively. So remember, we're starving it. Another part of the starving it is ignore it. Ignore it when you can. Ignore as much as you can when you can. You see, the issue is the large part about what your kid is doing, it's about getting a reaction from you. They're trying to elicit that response from you. And every time that you focus in, every time that you let them have it, they get exactly what they were looking for. That response, that reaction, that piece of us, that attention, the eye looks, the scolding, the snarky remarks. Yes, your kid would rather hear you gripe at them for whatever it is they're doing, whether it be kicking a wall. And Mark, I'm not saying that's necessarily what you guys are doing. I don't know. But they would rather get fussed at for kicking a wall or screaming at mom and dad or slamming doors or stomping off. They would rather do that than not hear anything from us at all. You have to just praise the junk ton out of them when you see them doing it right. You ignore what you can. Now, I want to make sure that I'm clear. Mark, I think you're right. We can't ignore wall kicking because that's damage of property. That's y'all's property and nobody deserves to have our property destroyed without our permission. And so I do absolutely recommend that you put stops to that. You do absolutely, and again, this is more generalized for everybody, but you know, if they're hurting someone else, you absolutely stop that. If somebody is hurting somebody else, that is violating the civil right for every man to have life, liberty, and freedom and pursuit of happiness. That's that life right to feel safe. That is a part of it. We never let our kids hurt others, even in hissy fits. Next thing is when it comes to ignoring it, don't react, don't talk, don't chide, because automatically anytime you do those things, it gives attention. I have seen more parents struggle with this than not. They want to react, they want to fight, they want to dicker, they want to chide. Well, you should have known better than to mess with the cookie jar, right? I mean, that's just all that they want to do. It doesn't get you anywhere. Next off, you might need to put them back in timeout. We'll go into this more in detail here on the last page of my notes, but in some cases, it may be that your kid gets up and gets out. What do? You physically get them back up, you pick them up, and you put them back in timeout. If they flip out and throw fits and swim and kick, you take them kicking and screaming, and you stick them back in the chair. Remember, you do all of this firmly, not hard, not mean, not vindictive, not, you're going to sit there, dang it. It just needs to be very, hey, I understand you're upset. You've got to sit here, baby girl. Hey, I'm sorry you're upset, son, but you've got to sit here. That's just the way it is. And then you take them and you physically put them back in the timeout. Remember, no talking. Once they start throwing that fit, once they start kicking that wall, once they start slamming themselves around, once they start throwing that toys, you get up, you walk over, you pick them back up, and you stick them back in that timeout. And you do it over and over and over and over. Then once they're calm, then you praise the snot out of them for being calm again. Remember, the goal is not to make them uncomfortable and hate throwing the temper tantrum. It's to make doing it right and being calm and being level-headed is what we want from them. We want to praise the snot out of that. Now, I want to make sure that I issue out a disclaimer here. Time out, listen to me carefully, time out is not a punishment. Time out is not a punishment. Do y'all need to repeat after me? It's okay if you need to. Time out is not a punishment. Too many parents treat time out as the way, well, if you're going to do this, then I'm going to go stick it here. And that turns into power struggles. Timeout is not about punishment. Timeout is about teaching our kids what we want from them, laser targeted, explaining to them exactly what we need and teaching them that. Now, sometimes that might be an uncomfortable lesson. So talking about this caller situation, what Mark phoned in about when it comes to his kiddo throwing a fit, let's talk a little bit about this. I think you're doing it right. The timeout is a good thing. People do on timeouts. In most cases, it's the people that do on timeout are those that don't do it correctly. So let's talk real quick what timeout needs to look like. You need to have a chair, or I've had one family a while back who did a carpet square, or just a spot in your floor where the kid sits down, and that's where they have to go for timeout. Timeout, again, is not about punishing our kids or making things stink for them or trying to make things awkward and uncomfortable for them. The purpose of time out is to help them cool off and get back in the game and think about new ways we can do it different next time. So you might have a chair or a carpet or spot. You want to make sure that that's in a boring place. There's not things that they can look at and play with and fidget with and interact with. Because the idea is we need the emotions to be there and to slowly trickle away as they think on those things. You want to make sure that you're able to see your kid at all times. You never want them to be out of your sight. I had a dad a while back who said, Trey, I was using timeout, and it was working amazingly. They would just go, and they would obey. And I realized one day that he was in there, sitting there playing on his games the whole time. So you absolutely need to make sure that you can see them. You need to make sure that you have a bland wall. And remember, nothing to touch around them. Nothing that they can play with. Nothing they can grab and pull on top of them like a bookshelf or anything like that. It just needs to be boring. It needs to be calm as possible. If they begin to throw a fit, throw themselves down, kick and squirm, kick stuff, bang stuff, throw stuff around, hit little brother and sister, what do? You very gently and yet very firmly move them back to their timeout. Move them back to timeout. Listen to me, guys. Here's the most important part. You need to be completely calm. This is not a power struggle. You're in charge. Trust me, you've got more physical power than they do. But don't use it that way. If they throw the temper tantrum in the fit, you pick them up, you take them back, and you sit them back down in their place, in their little beds, wherever it is you keep them. But you need to be completely calm whenever you do it. No fussing at them, no griping, no gritching, no lecturing. That makes us feel better. It does not make a kid feel better. No chiding them for what they did. You just stay completely calm. I'm telling you, that's the best way you can do it. Don't make eye contact with them, because that can be reinforcing. You just gently guide them, or maybe you carry them if they go limp on you, and you stick them back in their chair, or you stick them back in their spot. Whatever it is that you need to do. You put them in the timeout, guys. Set a timer. Don't forget about it. Let them have something definitive that they can count down with. Set a timer for them. I recommend 1 minute for every year of their age. So if they're 3 years old, like Mark mentioned, you got a three-year-old kid, that kiddo needs three minutes in timeout. Kids under 2 years old, don't do it. That part of the brain that helps them connect cause and effect is often not developed where adults are, and they don't necessarily understand what we're saying. So set that timer. Whenever you do, let them say, you may get up after this timer goes off. Then you go back to work, right? So if they're, again, you need to make sure that you can see them at all times, but you go back to work. Anytime you spent lecturing or fussing or griping, there's nothing for them but go, ooh, look, I get attention when. Next off, exhaust your time. Run that timer out, right? And 1 minute for every age of their life. You exhaust that time. If they get up out of their chairs, you walk over, you gently and firmly pick them up and stick them back in the chair. They get up again, you go and you firmly pick them up and set them back in the chair. You see a habit here? I had a mom who was trying to get her kid to stay in his timeout, and she told me, she said, Trey, I stopped counting at 80 times. He got up out of that chair. And she said it was probably well over 100 before they finally stopped doing that. But guess what happened when he finally realized mama wasn't joking? Sometimes you may have to do that. Ask them if they understand why they were in timeout. You would be surprised at how often I've told my kids, you know, go to timeout for this. And I say, do you understand why you were in timeout? And they say, it's because you said that. And I'm like, no. That's good, but that's not what I meant at all. It's because of this. Ask them if they understand why they were in there. Kids want to know. They want to know why you're in there. They want to know why their brothers and sisters are in there as well. And then last, that nasty little word, you got to be consistent. This is hard, but you got to be consistent. You got to do it every day when it's convenient, when it's inconvenient, when you're feeling good, when you're feeling bad, etc. You got to practice this stuff, and you got to practice it consistently. Well, guys, that wraps up this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Don't forget, guys, we really want to value your time while you're here. So if you will, jump on over, give us an email, internet voicemail, phone, whatever else. Let us know what you want to hear. Do you have any questions or comments, a topic you want to hear us go over, or anything like that, or just shoot us a little bit of encouragement. We love it. Hey, I hope you guys have a great week. And if nothing else, we'll see you guys this Friday, the Real Family Guys podcast. We're going to talk about good grief. Oh, yeah.